Welcome to the Financial Management Magazine podcast series, a service of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants. This series features discussions with chartered global management accountants and other experts about the topics, trends and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
When organizations face risks or uncertainties in their industries, a common response is to hunker down and manage it internally, like cutting costs or making processes more efficient. But what if the problem is too big for any one organization to solve? Australia is the third largest cotton producer in the world today. But a few decades ago, cotton farmers faced a major pest problem that led to more pesticides used, which in turn polluted rivers and affected communities. In this episode, we look at a recently published research that studied how various stakeholders in the cotton industry collaborated and improved the whole sector. And what are the lessons for management accountants? I'm Alexis Sito, an associate editor at FM Magazine, and we are joined by Dr. Paul Thambar, FCMA-CGMA, one of the researchers of the study, and is an educator and researcher at the accounting department at Monash University in Australia. Here's our conversation. Paul, welcome to the FM podcast.
Thank you, Alexis. Great to be here.
So, Paul, can you give us a sense of how the cotton industry in Australia was like back in the 1960s, and what were the challenges that farmers faced?
Sure. So the cotton industry in Australia has been around since colonial time. But the modern cotton industry was established in the early part of the 1960s by immigrant American farmers. Cotton at that point began to be grown on a large scale in and around the northern New South Wales town of Narrabri. And at that time, the cotton grown was natural cotton, which required large quantities of water and the establishment of large, obviously, dams that could provide the water. So like the Keep It Dam, that sort of provided the impetus for cotton growers to start growing cotton on a large scale in this part of Australia. But the challenge for cotton growers in the early years was to really combat the problem of cotton pests. Australian cotton, natural cotton, is subject to a range of cotton pests which were quite harmful in the impact that they had on the cotton plant. These cotton pests roamed rather freely, and the only way that pests could be controlled at that time was through the use of very strong and harmful chemical sprays, cotton pesticides. The other big challenge for cotton growing at that time was obviously the large amount of water that it required. The problem with the controlling the cotton pests with cotton pesticides was that it was a vicious circle. The more you sprayed, the more damage you did, not just to the cotton plant and the cotton pests, but also to the surrounding ecosystem. But more importantly, cotton pest developed biological resistance. Over time, more resistance meant you had to go to higher levels of or stronger pesticides, which then created more damage. And this was the challenge. By the late 70s, early 80s, the chemicals that were being sprayed on cotton farms were ending up in river systems and waterways, and was polluting other agricultural sectors like the livestock cattle farmers. The communities around cotton farms were getting very uptight about the environmental degradation that they felt and saw. And there was really pressure building on the sector by the early 80s. There was a lot of lobbying by communities and regional governments to the federal government of forcing the cotton industry to become more environmentally sustainable. And that sort of really brought massive challenge to the future of the cotton industry.
So what was the research about, and what were the questions that it was trying to answer?
We were provided with an opportunity to put in for a research grant that allowed us to go into the cotton industry to study how they collaborate, how collaboration was enabled in this multi-firm environment. We went in to the sector in the middle of 2012-2013. This multi-firm collaboration had been happening for over 50 years. With collaboration, there's two parts to it. There is the need to collaborate, or the cooperation element, getting everyone to cooperate, and then the other element, which is the coordination. How do you get multiple organizations to coordinate their actions? Very often with cooperation, as we saw in the cotton example, when you have an existential challenge, when you have a systemic uncertainty like the challenge posed by the cotton pests, cooperation is almost a given. Everyone needs to cooperate. They understand that no individual farmer could solve this problem on their own. But having cooperation is only the first step. How do you then coordinate the actions that you need to get not just across one or two firms, but across a whole industry sector with multiple types of stakeholders? And what we saw in this industry was that they had set up a whole range of what I refer to as hybrid mechanisms, but they're essentially accounting and management control mechanisms that you would normally see in within a single organization. Here, this sector had set up some of these mechanisms across the whole sector, and they were using it to enable this coordination, which we thought was quite interesting because we had not seen this in the accounting literature.
What about conflicting interests among the farmers and the various stakeholders? Because some of them are actually competitors, right? What made them want to work together, and how was their collaboration structured?
The first part is easy to answer. As I said, the need to collaborate when you have a problem that is bigger than you, when you know that when you on your farm, no matter how effectively you manage your cotton production and keep away the cotton pests are not necessarily going to stop at your boundary. If your neighbor, if the neighboring cotton farm is not able to control the cotton pest on their farm, those cotton pests are going to just slip over the boundary wall and come into your farm. So these farmers knew that the only way that they could be successful was if they worked together. So the need for collaboration, the cooperation element, was a given because they had this existential problem. This is no different to some of the challenges that we face today in many sectors. For example, we've got challenges around climate change. You know, you cannot, I think, manage climate change by individual organizations trying to, do something. You really need to get cross-organizational collaboration. You know, human slavery, or the modern slavery, as they call it, along the value chain. One organization, no matter how large or successful they are, will not be able to solve this problem unless they collaborate with their whole value chain. And it's not just about the cooperation, but it's also about the coordination. How do you get actions that are coordinated across multiple firms? While these firms compete with one another, they knew that they had a problem that was bigger than them. And if they took a very short-term view of trying to fix this problem, in a very isolated manner, I mean, they wouldn't be able to. But even if they thought that they could, it would have been disastrous. So that's why they felt that they had that impetus to collaborate.
So in this collaboration, was there a company that led the charge, so to speak, and the rest followed along, or were their contributions financially or in resources, was it equally distributed? How did it work?
Yeah, so the way it worked was that they had this group of pioneers, that they're referred to as we refer to them, you know, theoretically, you know, using this term boundary spanners, but these were cotton growers, cotton researchers, you know, cotton, you know, policymakers and consultants, you know, a small group of pioneers, change leaders, if you want to call it, who came together and said, okay, we have a problem. We need to get everyone to collaborate to resolve this problem of the cotton pests. But equally challenging for them was that they didn't know what had to be done. They knew to get collaboration across this whole sector required a range of mechanisms, collaboration mechanisms. They didn't know what it was. So this group basically started off by saying, okay, let's first start off by setting up some industry firms to get these different groups of stakeholders together so we can organize them. It's almost like a union organizing all the workers in a particular sector.
Some sort of a trade association.
Yeah. So, for example, they set up an organization called Cotton Australia, which became like a membership organization for all the cotton growers. They organized by geographic and regional locations. They started to have regular meetings and discussions where these pioneers or the boundary spanners went in and said, look, guys, we have a problem. This is what we think is the problem. We have these cotton pests. We are using pesticides. The pesticides are maybe controlling the cotton pest, but through resistance and through the adverse effects of the chemicals, we are doing more damage or more harm than solving this problem. So we need to work out what else can be done to improve the way we manage this problem. But we don't know how to do it. We need maybe research. So they brought in the researchers. These are ag science researchers who were working on some of these issues, but were really needed to sort of, you know, engage with the growers to be able to understand, you know, what was the problem? Why do you think a pesticide that you're spraying on your farm ends up in a river 20 kilometers down from your farm? How does it get there? So they didn't know these things. That before they could even start thinking of the solution, they really had to do research to understand the problem and its effect. And then out of that, they started to develop what they refer to as best practices. Basically, information that they put into a practice that said, okay, this is how you should do aerial spraying of chemicals, or this is how you should store your chemicals. So basically policies and procedures that they developed out of the research that they did.
So you have the surveys, the research, and later best practices developed. Were there challenges when these farmers tried to implement the recommendations?
Yeah, so no, the reason they set up the information as a best practice was you can't have a one size fits all, because if you're working with multiple firms, they are all different. They have a different way of their different business model is different. Their strategy is different, but more importantly, their geographical and their sort of agricultural context is different. So if you are on a farm in Narrabri and I'm on a farm, you know, 10 kilometers down the road, the soil conditions, all the agricultural context that we are working in is not going to be the same. They're going to be different. So I cannot have the same procedure that you have, because it just won't work. So what happened was these best practices were set up so that each farmer could benchmark their current practices with the best practice and identify any gaps and then develop an action plan to close that gap. So while they were doing it slightly differently, they were all in a sense, contributing to the same best practice. So this is a classic way of using benchmarking, which is a key management control. So you look at your practices, you benchmark it to an industry standard, and then you identify gaps, and then you plan how you're going to close that gap. And as every farmer did that, over time, the industry as a whole became better in managing the cotton pest because the cotton production system across the sector was improved.
Were there farmers who said, we're not going to do this. This is not in line with what I want to achieve.
Well, again, I come back to the original, my point about the need for collaboration was a given because they had this existential problem. Now, yes, during that period, there were people who went away from cotton farming and went and did other things because they just felt it was too hard to sort of, you know, change and improve the cotton production system. But for those who hung on and worked in the sector, they were sold on the idea that they had to change. They had to collaborate. They had to cooperate to solve this problem. The challenge for them was to work out, how do we do this? How do we coordinate the action? And all these mechanisms that I've been talking about were really designed not to get the cooperation, but to actually get the coordination going across multiple firms. So if you come back to the climate change challenge, if you take away the political, I mean, there's a huge political layer around whether climate science is factual or not. So there's a political angle that you really need to overcome. But if you take that, leave that aside, the challenge of climate change is really, again, how do you get the transition happening? How do you get, you know, say a whole industry or a whole region to coordinate their actions? And I think what our study sort of provides is some insights into how you could set up, you know, similar hybrid mechanisms to enable this coordination.
So it's been 50 some years since the cotton industry realized that they need to work together. What are some results from then, and how has the cotton industry in Australia changed?
Yep. Today, if you walk in, and I think in that paper that we published, we have a quote really captures the whole thing, but I'll just paraphrase it. If you walk into a cotton farm, you'll find that the all cotton grown is transgenic. In other words, it's organic cotton. It is more resistant to cotton pests, uses less water. It's also a good example of how they've increased the yields using a different type of cotton cultivar, as they call it. So the current cotton plant can produce something like 12 to 14 bulbs on a branch. Each bulb is where you get the cotton linked. Previously, with natural cotton, you would get maybe two or three bulbs on a branch. So not only did they develop cotton technology that was more resistant to cotton pests and use less water, they have also created a higher yielding cotton plant. So good example of where a developed economy like Australia is producing cotton that is, you know, in terms of quality is probably one or two, and it is competing with low cost cotton that is grown in places like India, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan. And Australian cotton is used with lower cost cotton to manage the quality, to improve the quality of the cotton bale that goes into the clothes that you and I wear. So that is one thing. The cotton production system, the practices they use, you know, is totally different to what they had before. It is more effective and efficient in the way they grow the cotton, the way they use the water, the way they use pesticides. I mean, they still have to use a certain level of pesticides, but it's far less than what it was before. It's more targeted. The whole industry is far more efficient in terms of costs. I mean, previously the cost of producing cotton was high because of the high cost of pesticides. Today, they are much more efficient in the way they grow cotton. So there's a lot of there's a whole sea change in the way cotton is grown and the way the industry is viewed. It is no longer seen as a environmental vandal as they used to be. I mean, there's still some questions about water because cotton farmers traditionally tend to hold the rights to the water that we have in our biggest river system called the Murray Darling. And there's a lot of politics around that. But in terms of their efficiency and effectiveness, if you compare the cotton industry today to 40, 50 years ago, it's totally different.
So, Paul, what are specific lessons that you can pinpoint for management accountants today?
So, I mean, CIMA and many other professional associations are pushing this concept of, the management accountant being the finance business partner, working across business units within an organization, not just doing the number crunching and the transactional accounting, but also taking that accounting information and helping business units and business managers to make better decisions. What we see within organizations is that very often the finance business partner is really playing a role in helping collaboration to take place within business units, using the accounting information to get cooperation, and also helping to coordinate the activities that each business unit is doing in terms of helping to meet the strategy of the organization. And we use all the standard accounting and management control mechanisms that we have, whether it's planning, whether it's budgeting and variance analysis, whether it's performance measurements, KPIs, etc. I think we have a tool set and we have the skills to be able to do this across organizations. Because today, I don't believe any organizations operates in isolation. Most organizations are part of an ecosystem, whether they realize it or not. Yes, there is competition between organizations, but there's also a lot of collaboration. And as management accountants and finance business partners, we can help organizations in this ecosystem deal with these big challenges, because we do face some big challenges, and some of these challenges are bigger than any single organization. We've mentioned climate change, we've mentioned modern slavery, water. If you are working in a sector where water is a key input, that's probably an existential challenge in many parts of the world, because water is scarce. And there are other examples of scarce resources. So I believe that as management accountants and as finance business partners, we have an important role and we have the tool set and the skills to be able to play a much wider role than just remain within our organization. And that, I believe, is the key sort of takeaway for me from having done this work with Australian Cotton. And I would encourage all management accountants and finance business partners to be thinking more broadly than just their own organization.
Well, Paul, thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you, Alexis.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the Association of International Certified Professional Accountants or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the association, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The association, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to and assume no responsibility for the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.